This week's show with Debbie Hodge of Stitch Stories is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. In 2022, Sassy Jack Stitchery is celebrating 5 years as your needlework supplies home. Be sure to visit the Sassy Jack's website and get your kit for The Sun Always Shines at Sassy Jack's, a special design by Lindy Stitches to celebrate Sassy Jack's 5th anniversary. There are still openings for upcoming workshops. Petite Dutch Dalliance with Susan Greening Davis, June 3 and 4, and Dance of the Flowers with Best Seal of Summerhouse Stitchworks, August 5 and 6. Contact Kim for details and to sign up. Also, the new Bristol sampler, Alice Ellen Usher, is available as a PDF download or as a printed chart. Don't miss out on this beautiful Bristol sampler. Thanks to the folks at Sassy Jack's for sponsoring the show, and now on to our conversation with Debbie Hodge. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, Debbie Hodge from Stitched Stories. Debbie, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, we got to talk about your work. We got to talk about your work because it is unique. All right, so we're just going to start. We're just going to talk about your work. So what caught my eye is your designs are, I love the business name Stitched Stories, because that's literally what your designs are. How do you get to a point where you're, because you're either telling a story or you have an object like a clock that within it is a story. How does this come about?
I don't know.
Excellent. Okay.
Well, and that's how creating is, right? You just have faith. You put this first stroke on the canvas, right? You just keep taking steps and it comes together. I mean, it takes me a while to make a design, but I mean, I think usually there's some inspiration or there's some desire, you know, like somehow all of a sudden it occurred to me, oh, wouldn't a cuckoo clock be fun? Because I have a specific goal with my designs, and that is that it be something that somebody could pick up and stitch while they hang out with their family. It's not difficult, but it's not going to be over immediately. If you're going to invest the money in the kit, you're going to get at least 2 or 3 weeks of work, you know, depending on how fast you stitch. So I'm always looking for imagery that can be turned into classic hand embroidery stitches and, yeah, take a certain amount of time to do.
Well, I love that it's on your website a couple of places where you've clearly defined, you delineated exactly what it is you're looking for in a design, and and you stick within those parameters pretty well.
Yes. I put off embroidering for so, you know, I embroidered when I was young, and then I hadn't embroidered for a long time, and I kept seeing beautiful embroidery and wanting to do it, but I couldn't somehow bring myself to do what I was seeing because it wasn't what I wanted to do. It was too gorgeous, right? I love the thread painting or something done all in French knots, but it would just, I can't do, it's just too much for me. It felt overwhelming. Or I bought a bunch of kits and they were just like on Amazon or whatever. They weren't very well designed and they were done in an hour and I didn't feel satisfied with them. So I was trying to make what I would like to stitch.
Well, yeah, and why not? But it's interesting that you found this middle ground. And when I look at your designs, I can see an audience for them, a very clearly defined audience of just that. I don't have to learn all these fancy techniques and spend a year doing it, and it's not done in a half an hour. And you found a nice middle ground, but also a nice middle ground that offers a little more in terms of stitching than just making X's on linen.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I had this thing in my mind, and you know, whatever we think what we remember usually isn't what really was. So I had it in my mind that I had made a sampler as a child or a teen, and that it was exactly what my kits are now. And of course, my mom was in the midst of moving while I was starting this business, so I didn't end up seeing that sampler again until recently. And I realized it was just a simple cross stitch. I think it was probably a stamped cross stitch, but it was much simpler than what I've designed. But on the other hand, there was a tractor, there was a hen, there were some words. And it was that idea of a collage. I wanted it to also not only be that you get to use, I don't know, 8 to 12 stitches, but that you could just dip into it and you could do one little piece and you could finish it in a sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And what's nice about it, what I like about your work is that you do have all those stitches, because I'm a person who must easily get bored. So when I work on something, I want a little bit of variety, not too much variety, but a little bit of variety.
Yeah.
And it looks like your pieces, they have like a little bit of something, and then you can move on and do a different stitch or a different motif.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, and some people do like that repetitive. And I do have a few, like my oldest son's girlfriend really likes repetitive stuff. So she really liked like Lighthouse because there's all the waves and there aren't very many stitches. But most of them have more stitches. Most of them aren't like that.
How do you address that? Because a lot of people, I mean, there's just a bazillion people who do cross stitch. And if you throw in a specialty stitch in a cross stitch piece, they want nothing to do with it. And they just want to make X's, or, you know, I'm sure there are needlepoint people who just want to do basket weave. How do you deal with that in your designs, where you're really asking people to make stitches that they probably never seen or aren't interested in? Is it a lot of extra instruction, or is it the fact that it's just a little bit that helps them approach it?
If you get one of my kits, there's 12 stitches on the back page with diagrams, and I never really vary from those 12 stitches. And so maybe French knot is new to somebody, or lazy daisy is new to somebody, but I give them pretty thorough instructions and just try to assure them they'll be able to figure it out. So they aren't really hard, and I haven't added a lot of complexity. Like sometimes I see some techniques and I'm like, oh, that would be pretty cool. But then I'd have to hire somebody to illustrate it for me. And this is a business too. And so I've created these parameters that I'm working in. And I've also found from having online businesses for a long time, it's okay to just be in a really specific little niche and do what you do and not try to be everything to everybody.
Yeah. Something to be said for that. Yes. Yeah.
But people can generally do these basic 12 stitches.
Yeah, well, that's just it. They're not complex, and you're not asking them to do a ton of lazy daisies or French knots. I mean, it's a lot of your designs are more outline type things, so it's you can do a little bit and not mess it up, and you'll be just fine. Yeah.
Yeah, and I get I get cross stitchers who say they like this just as a break or as an easy thing to take along when they're with their family, so that they don't have to concentrate as hard and just, you know, experience needlecraft in a little bit different way than the counted cross stitch that is their first love.
Yeah. And you stay, your designs stay within, looks like maybe an 8-inch hoop size, something like that. Is that what it is?
Yep. I'm very consistent here. They're 8-inch hoops.
Okay. So
once in a while you could frame them in a 7 if you wanted a tight frame, but yes, they're all made in the same canvas. And maybe there'll be a point where I'll change, but because everybody, you know, of course, has advice for me about what I should do.
Really?
Right? You run into that. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do that? But I feel like I haven't exhausted this format for the ideas that I have.
Well, see, I think that's interesting from a business perspective, and you have had several businesses, so you at least have a grounding there. But yeah, set some parameters and stick with them, because, you know, there's that old thing, you can't be good at everything, or you can't be everything to everybody, and stick within those parameters. And it sounds like from your a sheer material perspective, that you have that pretty well defined, so you're not having to carry a bunch of inventory.
Exactly. It's not hard for me to bring on a new design. I've got my inventory all set up. I mean, I use a lot of different floss colors, because I actually include full skeins of floss as opposed to just having big spools. But I have an MBA, and I actually majored in operations back then. So I've got my inventory pretty well set up.
There it is, right there.
I can flow things, right? I'm not buying tons of materials. That way I can keep the kits affordable. I don't have to spend more than a day a week down in my basement putting everything together. It just works.
Yeah. Now, when I buy a kit, is it the design printed on the fabric?
It is. And here's one more parameter, right? So yeah. The design is printed in color to a 10.5-inch square of white cotton fabric. And some people wish it weren't. It's permanent print. So it makes it hard to go with really different color schemes because a little bit of the ink might show through if you have a stitch off. But I also do sell some of the designs in that sticky backed wash away fabric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the more popular designs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a permanent thing. I mean, it's stitchy, just covered up.
Most people are very happy with it. Once again, you can't make everybody happy.
Yeah.
But most people love that it's printed in color because, again, this is supposed to be relaxing, easy to take with you while you're waiting, you know, to pick somebody up at an appointment or while you're traveling or while you're, you know, watching the Super Bowl if you're not a football fan.
Right. Well, and
that was subtle.
Right, you want to hang out with your family, you want to be with people, but you really want your hands kept busy.
Yeah, okay. I just watched the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Oh.
I watch the commercials. No, I watch it too, but it's just a way to be very friendly. It's easy, I think, to work with the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what's nice for people too, since that's nice that it's printed on, because I think that terrifies most people. Oh, you mean I have to transfer the design onto my own piece of fabric? And I've been teaching beginner stitchers, and that just terrifies them that you're going to say, okay, you need to transfer this. They're like, they look at you with those big eyes, and you're like, oh. What if I make a mistake? I'm like, you're not gonna make a mistake, but this takes that away from them, you know. That,
right? Because it terrified me. Because I'm not a long time stitcher. I was new to this 2 years ago, and the idea of transferring terrified me.
Right, and then the fact that the colors are there too, so they don't even have to, you know, you just match the floss to the color of your pattern.
Yes.
How nice is that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I do include a really detailed stitch diagram that, you know, tells you exactly, you know, which floss and which stitch to use. But yes, you can a lot of people just like to do their own thing with it. They don't care what stitches I say to use. They're going to go in and they're going to fill certain areas in a different way and have fun with it.
Yeah. Now you have a pretty extensive maker background. You've been scrapbooking and done a couple of books and so on and so forth. Kind of take us through that, because it's an interesting journey that you're now back to embroidery.
I know. I feel like everything set me up to be here as I turn 61, right? It's just the perfect spot for me to be now. Again, just one foot in front of the other. I think I had been trying to write the great American novel, and then I had kids. And I got really into photography and storytelling with photography, and the scrapbooking business was kind of going then. It was just before magazines started to die. And I just started submitting work to magazines, scrapbooking, you know, photography and then scrapbooking. And because I like to create and I love the online space for connecting with creators. So I was into scrapbooking for quite a long time, and I started I don't even know how it works. Yeah, so I wrote a book called Get It Scrapped, and I had a online website where I taught scrapbooking, but my focus was never technique and product. My focus was always storytelling and visual design.
Is there an art background there?
No, but I spent a lot of time self-studying graphic design. Spent a lot of time studying how to use color, how to use line. I mean, if any of my designs, like I have one called Create that's got a woman in profile, and then all around her head are creative motifs like yarn and paintbrushes and books. But that design, while there's all those pieces, there's really strong lines. There's really strong vertical lines in there of paintbrushes and a stock, and the dressmaker's dummy, strong vertical lines control it. And then I've got visual triangles of motifs and visual triangles of color. So I spent a lot of time studying all that in order to get my stuff published in scrapbooking magazines. I had to have really solid design that had control over color, and that had a focal point, and that had flow, and that had unity as a design, as a whole.
Does the design work kind of flow from you, or is it an idea and then it's more of a mechanical way of putting it together?
Well, like a recent one I did is called Rolling Hills, and it's just got all these hills that are filled with different sort of plant life. And it has sort of a folk art landscape kind of feel. It's very whimsical. So I knew I wanted to do something like that. And I always compose in, I try to compose first in just grayscale. And so as I'm composing, I'm thinking, all right, the whole green is going to function as the backdrop. And then there's going to be three, you know, as I see that I've got sky and a pond and a greenhouse, I'm like, there's going to be three really strong blue pieces. So as I'm designing, I'm moving them so that they're a nice framing visual triangle. And then I'm thinking, oh, I really want juicy oranges and reds and golds in there, but I understand that I can't use very big quantities of them. Mm-hmm. So I feel like once you learn design principles, which are so fun to learn, and you can learn them, you can get a book on design and color and flow, and then you'll use it in how you place your throw pillows around your house, or how you put the flowers in your garden, or how you make anything, once you understand just the basics, just like 8 basic principles of layout design.
That's so interesting. You start with grayscale, and I've, you know, longtime listeners are probably tired of me saying this, but when I first learned photography, I had an old master, you know, experienced photographer to help me out. And he said, shoot black and white, shoot and develop black and white. And when you get so you can produce a good black and white image with all the elements, then worry about color. And it was the best advice I ever got, because it really makes you get the pieces right. And because your mind just compensates, once color's there, your mind will compensate for anything. And it was just really excellent advice. So it's interesting that you start with that.
Yep, because if I don't, it just gets too confusing.
And you did a video. I watched one of your videos about how you worked your Start With Coffee kit, where you were changing the fonts. And that was an interesting discussion, how you work through that process. So when you work your designs, you don't just start with paper and pen. It looks like you actually stitch them when you're designing?
I do. I work a lot in Photoshop. And then I usually stitch a design for the at least 3 times before it's done. So, yeah, I'm discovering as I go. Right. So like right now I'm working on a design with moths, and I'm trying to design to. So I'll stitch it through, because I can't decide how much I want to stick to the actual markings on a moth and how much I want to play with fun stitch combinations that people might have seen around that are just fun. So I sort of leave things open the first time. I run the fabric through my printer and print it off in black and white, and I work through, yeah, at least 3 times, which is fun.
most really designers fun. Are glad to have one.
You know, right? I mean, that's how I discover it, and that's where the fun is in this work to me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, everybody has a different approach to coming up with the final product, and you know, there's really 2 camps. There's those who just design on paper and they're good to go, and somebody go stitch it. And then there's others who have to go through the process themselves, because it's constantly evolving. And each works ultimately. It's just getting there. Do you target an audience? I mean, do you do that where you say, all right, this is what I think an audience would like, or do you do for you and hope they like it?
In the beginning, I started doing for me because I was just figuring it out. And then, so the first year, I think I ended up with about 12 designs, and they were just whatever occurred to me. And then my son kept saying to me, you really ought to do a Halloween design. And I kept saying, but I really don't like Halloween. And he said, but people really like Halloween, and I did a Halloween design and it sold so many. And that's when I realized I needed to do more themed designs and more seasonal designs. So since like last August, right now, I've been really cranking a lot of designs out because I'm trying to fill out all the seasons and all the themes, just to have a library that, yeah, that has that kind of flow. So, and it's good because it's a prompt, right? And I never think it's going to work. Right now, everybody's been saying to me they want another camping design, but they want a tent in it and they want mountains in it. And I'm, you know, I'm not really a mountain or a tent kind of person, but I'm working on it. And I'm just trying to have the faith. Because I know if I look through all of my designs, I remember when I first started them, like I love the domestic scenes inside of a house and I never could figure out how they were going to work. And they're hard, but in the end they work and I love them. So, yeah.
Yeah, those stand out for me. They're not the kind of thing I would stitch, nothing personal, but they really stand out for me design-wise. Because it's fun to see all the elements, whatever scene you decide to use. It's fun to see all the elements you put in. And, yeah, I really enjoyed looking at those.
Thanks.
It's so interesting to me how, because now I don't get caught up in holidays. I just don't select stuff like that at all. I mean, it's just immaterial to me. But you're right. I mean, for a lot of people, like in the summer, they want to stitch something that's associated with what they're doing. And at Christmas, they want to stitch Christmas things. And yeah, as a good designer, I suppose you provide that stuff.
Yeah, it's really true that people do want to stitch seasonally. And now I'm learning that. And I'm also learning that you need to be a little bit ahead of the season, right? So
it helps.
Yeah. So I'm learning that as I go through, and we'll see. I just want to flesh the whole library out with more seasonal and holiday stuff, and then I don't know. We'll see if I stick then with the 8-inch hoops and keep doing that, or what happens. That's the fun of it, right? That I get to figure that out. As long as I'm making things that people want.
Yeah, you don't do that, Beth, do you? Seasonal things.
I do a few seasonal things, but I find I normally mainly stitch either Christmas. And then other things. And I don't know what it is. And I'm like, I cannot stitch any more Christmas. I'm not allowed to put them on the walls at Christmas time. There's only so much space.
Right.
Like, oh. You know, I look around at Christmas time. I'm like, okay, look, if I finish this, where can I hang it? You know, it's like, that's the issue. But, yeah. And so it's kind of, that makes it difficult. But I keep on thinking now I can move to like 4th of July or something, because there's lots of those out. But normally I don't. I'm not as much drawn to changing things out. I'm more interested in the color palette. And I think that's what I love about your pieces, is they're bright and cheerful. You don't have the muted colors, it doesn't seem to me. It seems like they're very engaging
Yeah, they whimsical. Generally are. They are pretty bright. So... Although when I did, I have a recent one that's Grow, and it's a bunch of gardening motifs, but I purposely did that in sort of more of rusts and gold. I tried to do it in a closer to a vintage kind of thing, but it's still pretty bright. I mean, the other thing is all my designs are just on white fabric, because of course many people have said to me, why aren't you using a colored background? but I haven't mastered that yet. I'm still doing this.
Yeah. In the short time you've been doing this, what have been the biggest challenges for you?
I don't know.
Okay.
well, you know, because this was meant to be a business that my other business was pretty stressful. And this was meant to be a business with sort of lower stakes that could complement that. You know, I've gone from selling a $1,000 product to selling a $32 product.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it feels easier. I mean, of course, there's the challenges of running a business, right? And building an audience and building an email list and making offers, because I need this to be profitable and I need enough people to buy it to keep it going. So, yeah.
So when you started this, what prompted you to start this? Did you have a plan? You see an opportunity, or just had designs and you felt like you wanted to sell them to people?
Well, I let's see. It was in March when COVID started, and my
home, there it is, right there.
We were supposed to go on a cruise with my sons and their girlfriends, so we weren't going to get to go. And I don't know. I bought kites and board games and crafty things because we were going to spend a weekend together, trying not to be too bummed about not being on a cruise. And that's when I had been meaning to embroider, and that's when I got these. And then I didn't like the designs, and I started making my own designs. And my family's just been always very supportive of me. And my other business was really rolling along really well, and I had some money that I could invest. And then also one of my husband's students had lost her internship, and my son had lost his internship that rolling into that first summer. So I think it was my husband was like, why don't you just make a business, and why don't you, you know, get Isaac and Hannah to help you out. And so we spent that summer along with a woman, Amy Kingsford, who's worked with me at all my businesses. She's incredibly creative. So we spent the summer and we did market research, figured out who we would target, figured out what we would charge, what the first designs should look like. It was pretty exciting and pretty fun. And people were buying the kits. So it was kind of an impulse, and then it became this, oh my gosh, this is a lot more fun than my other business. Or I've been teaching online since 2007, back in bulletin boards, you know, before people even had websites to teach on. And it's a long time to be teaching online, and this just felt like a natural change.
Well, you certainly picked a good time to do something that requires online activity, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and of course, right now it's a challenge to, you know, everybody selling anything right now has got to make sure they can stay afloat as everybody, you know, as we have one more period of change in our economy and our lives.
Yeah.
Right. So, right, even supply chain. So is that affecting your business? Yeah.
Well, it's kind of funny because the supplier of floss called me and he was like, are you going to be placing a huge order like last May? And I was like, no, because I bought way too much last year because I was so panicked about supply chain. I, you know, bought thousands of hoops. I overbought floss. I overbought a lot of stuff. So I haven't had supply chain problems. And I get my fabric is printed by Spoonflower. Are you familiar with them?
I've heard of them because I used to listen to a lady who does podcasts on fabrics, and that's where I first ran into that. Yeah, that's quite an operation, isn't it?
Yeah, and they expanded their capacity about a year ago, so I haven't had any problem with them. I've got plenty of hoops. My supplier of floss I use DMC floss. I'm able to get that. I think the biggest problem is for every kit, I actually make a 4-page, 8.5 by 11-inch booklet. It's heavy cardstock. That just getting Vistaprint to get that right has been the biggest challenge. I can't believe how many mistakes they make. So, yeah. Huh. I mean, it's a challenge, but I feel like, I mean, for me, this is the business I want to spend working on during my 60s. So I'm excited to see how it goes, and I'm just going to trust it's all going to work.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And we set this up after I'd just been to one of my local guild meetings, and one of the ladies there was working on a sort of a similar design, and we were all kind of looking at it. She goes, yeah, this is perfect, because she's older, and she printed it herself, I think, on a soluble fabric. But she said, it's nice to have these where you can sit and I can visit with all of you, and I'm just stitching on the line. She says, it's fabulous. And I think that as we get older too, and our eyesight is not as good, it's kind of nice to have these things that are printed again so we can continue doing our stitching. Because that's what I love. I love the textile feel of putting my needle in fabric and pulling it through. That's why I never got into digital scrapbooking. I couldn't touch the paper sort of thing.
Right.
Who wants to do it on the computer? I can't touch it. So I think, but the embroidery kits, you know, I think more people are going to return to those because you can see them. You know, you really don't need all the extra paraphernalia you do when you're doing like a high count cross stitch piece.
Right. Right. And I was a big kind of cross stitcher, like in my early 20s, I think. In fact, I pulled a lot of it out and gave it to my mom. She's going to get it framed. She was shocked at how much I had that I'd never done anything with. So.
I don't know anybody like that.
No, you don't know anybody. People are continually saying to me, but what, you know, people, especially customers who've, you know, bought every kit I've made, they're like, but what do you do with all of them? And I was like, well, I just sort of stack them up, and I like to display them on a plate stand, and I only ever have one or two out at a time, and I just swap them out. But for me, it's the act more as much as the display that I love. But a lot of people like to display finished projects.
Well, and I think these would make nice pillows. I'm going to be honest with you. My daughter has a huge love of pillows, and I'm thinking, I could stitch one of these for her and make it into a pillow.
Yeah, people do that. And some quilters put them as a square into a quilt.
Right.
So, yeah,
there's, you know, it's not, you don't just have to put it in the hoop or, a tote bag.
Yes, that's what some people had wanted. That's why I have some that are on that sticky backed water soluble fabric, because some people wanted them on tote bags or pillows. So I have those. I am not selling as a PDF. So, which disappoints some people.
No. Yeah, that's a trend we've talked about, is this downloadable PDF things. And it's interesting to watch that evolve, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in the next year or two, because there's seems to be a real push these days for that.
Yeah, the few that I sold when I first started this business immediately ended up on a foreign website for sale. Because if you have my download, you've got a beautiful, you can print the whole thing. So that's one reason. And then the other reason is I sometimes use pieces of licensed art. Like I'll buy a commercial license for some of the pieces, you know, like the actual structure of the lighthouse. So I have a license to print it myself, but I don't have a license to distribute it digitally.
Okay. So. Yeah, see, that's the problem with the PDFs, is you're relying on the honesty of a whole bunch of people to buy theirs and keep it. And,
right.
Yeah.
And most people understand that, but there's always those few.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, right.
Yeah. Luckily, I've been in the online business space for a really long time, and I've gotten a pretty thick skin about a lot. I've just tried to stay really firm and just... You know, it's right. It is how it is. I don't need to apologize.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And the fact that you offer it as a, if people want it on colored fabric or something else, they can.
I have some on the water soluble, and I would make, if somebody emailed me and they were a good customer and, you know, they said, can't you do that one on water soluble? Sure. I may well consider doing that. I just, not many of them are selling, so I haven't expanded it much.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's why I say it'll be interesting to see that evolve, because I feel like the pendulum is swinging toward offering downloadable PDFs. But if a bunch of designers start to see that their charts are places where they're not getting sales and they should, then that pendulum is going to literally jump to the other side, because, you know, that at some point, you know, you start adding up all the sales that didn't happen because somebody passed one around to all their friends, and I don't care how thick-skinned you are, you're not going to put up with that very long.
No, I'm thick-skinned when people tell me that I'm mean for not selling them a PDF, but I'm not going to sell them a PDF because it's a lot of work to make these designs. It's our work. We get to sell it whatever way we want to sell it.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
My business.
Yep. Well, it's such a tough time. Like I'm right in the middle of trying to buy a new bike, and they're hard to find.
Yeah, my husband's a big biker, so I've been hearing this.
Yeah, really, really hard to find. And I just talked to a guy at a shop I didn't know existed till someone said, "Hey, have you tried this shop?" And he said to me, "No, he didn't have what I wanted, and it would be July before he could get it." But he says, "Have you got
printed it?
Pardon me?
You want you to 3D print the part?
Yeah, that's not happening. I'm not riding any 3D printed bike. I don't care how well they're made. Yeah, you got to be kidding me. And there are people who have made them, and you know, you're nuts. Yeah, you go screaming down a hill at 30 miles an hour, and your 3D printer decides to. Yeah, no. But he said to me, he said, go to the manufacturer's website and just start looking for shops that have it. And he said, just, you know, start going further and further away from home until you find one and then order it. And I said, well, yeah, I can do that. But I said, I'm really kind of old school in that I like to buy from the shop where I'm going to have the work done on the bike. And I said, yeah, I can buy a bike and assemble it. That's not a problem. But at some point I'm going to need some work. And I like to be able to walk in and say, hey, I bought this bike from you. I know you, and do the work. And his response was, yeah, but he said, these days we understand. And he says, quite frankly, if you come in for service, you're going to pay for it. And so that's business for us. So we don't mind. And I thought, that's, you talk about a change, because, yeah, you know, 5-10 years ago, that would have been, well, you bought it, why don't you take it back to the shop you bought it from? Well, they're 50 miles away. You know, I can't. But yeah. So, you know, and that's where I'm struggling with this whole marketplace, not bikes and not needlework, but it just in general is, you know, I was brought up when, you know, you buy local and you support the local shops. And you support the business that you bought it from. And, boy, it's really hard for me to open my mind.
Mm. Well, you know, eyeglasses are that way now, right? It used to be that my optometrist wouldn't want me to go order my glasses online. But now they sort of facilitate it.
Yeah.
They understand that that's going to happen. And so they offer other services and, you know, try to give you good service in your checkup instead of just counting on selling the glasses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, and that's part of needlework. I mean, needlework has changed so much. I mean, you don't sell through stores at all, do you?
You know, if people contact me, then I'll do wholesale with them. But I kind of like just selling direct to consumer. Yeah.
But see, that's another aspect that is really coming into play, is there are just a lot of designers who are doing it all themselves. And that's an interesting aspect. And, you know, Etsy obviously facilitates that. But then we see designers moving away from Etsy, and I'm sure that's a story and a half to tell, and setting up their own websites and just doing it. So the whole thing is just changing on several fronts.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting that it's exciting we can reach so many people now using online business tools, that we actually have that opportunity, right? I mean, I've got a mailing list of 32,000 people, and I started my business 2 years ago. 32,000 people that I can tell about my designs. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, and you've built this all off social media.
Yeah, and I used paid ads. I've put a lot of the money that I've made right back into growing my mailing list and growing awareness of my business, especially like in the first 18 months. I mean, well, I'm just 2 years old coming up in July. But so just until about January, I was really plowing most of the money that I made right back into ads to build my audience. But now it's sort of got a momentum of its own. I really wanted to sell on my own platform, not Etsy. And I believe that one needs a mailing list and a presence.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah. No, there's no question. You have to have a foundational audience, or you just won't survive. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. I'm not a great social media. I'm not great at clever social media kind of stuff. So, so I paid to grow my list.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Yeah. Yeah. It takes up so much time. I mean, you just have to be after it all the time. It really is. I battle it constantly. I really should do a post. You know, so I basically post the three shows that we do a week. That's about all I do. But now Beth, you're, you're really good at it. You post all the time. I always admire that because I just don't get to it.
Right, right. And I just make it. I try to keep it as short and sweet as I can. But yes, you know, and that's the, you know, to reach the audience, especially younger people, you know, the Instagram, even reaching people through Facebook. You know, that's where people are going. That's where all the people are looking at images, looking for new ideas, fresh things. And you can't just ignore it.
Right.
My husband's like, oh, that social media stuff. I'm like, well, I use it just to get ideas, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you have to use it.
Absolutely.
If you're creative, I think.
It's just think so part of too. Life. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, especially I like looking at complementary art. I mean, I enjoy looking at embroidery, but I get my best ideas from looking at, you know, woodcuts or quilting or painting or illustration.
Right, right. And I like looking at mixed media and quilting for that same reason. I'm more looking at colors and how they lay things out. I especially like abstract art, just because I like the colors that show up more than anything else. So do you draw inspiration from color from quilts or?
I don't know. The color, somehow as I'm working in grayscale, I start to get an idea of some colors that I know I'll be using. And I usually just know my dominant color. The color scheme I don't usually get. I don't know why. Who knows how our brains work, huh?
Right. And I'm looking at your designs and you don't like, it seems like some people, they use the same colors again and again and again.
Right.
But you seem to have use all across the palette. You know, it's not just all these soft kind of earth tones. You have brights.
So here's something I really like to do when I create, and this is what I did a lot with scrapbooking and creating challenges. I like to set myself a challenge to use something. You know, like there's one here, a design I have called Sit a While, and it's got these periwinkle drapes. And I really just wanted to use that blue gray, I just wanted to use that color and build a color scheme off of it. So sometimes I'll just say, you know, or I might even look at my whole collection and say, wow, you haven't done any reds. So I might set myself the challenge to work with those. And I think also because I don't work with, because I'm actually buying full skeins of floss as opposed to the cones, I have that flexibility.
Talk about your kits, because whenever I buy a kit, and I don't buy kits as a rule, because I'm always afraid that I'm not going to have enough thread. And I hate starting a project and, you know, if I mess up or decide to pull it out, the fear of running out of thread. How do you build your kits?
Every kit has full skeins of floss, and there's enough floss to stitch a design twice.
Ah.
And in fact, there's a little upsell in my shopping cart. Like once you buy a kit, it'll say, hey, would you like to get a second fabric pattern? Cause you can stitch this twice. A lot of people buy just the fabric patterns, and there's a page on my website. If you went to my website and went to the drop-down menu, there's a DMC floss colors, and I tell exactly which flosses I used. So if you did run out, you could get that. But my kits are also put together. So you get the fabric, you get the full skeins of floss, you get a bamboo hoop, and then everything is in a little storage tin, a little clear top storage tin. It's 5.5 by 3.5 inches, which is kind of fun. And you get two needles. And then I also, you get a little bitty teacup needle minder in every kit too. So I hear from a lot of our customers that they find a lot of value in all the little extras that they get.
Yeah. So,
that's nice that it's all together.
Yeah.
Because you have everything.
Right. So you can, you know, and you can add on a pair of scissors, or you may have your own scissors, but the little tin will hold all your floss and your scissors and your needles. And so then if you've got multiple projects going, right, you can just keep them. It's just easy to keep everything together.
Road trip kits. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I have some new tins ordered, some larger tins, because people just love these tins and they always want to know. And I don't want to become a tin reseller. So I don't sell the small tins. I usually tell them where they can get them. But I'm getting some larger tins with a really I'm making an old fashioned kind of sticker on it that will be larger for people to hold more of their stash in. Just because, yeah, we like to keep things. Stitchers like to store their projects well.
Yep.
Right. And like you said, I like every Sunday I go to my mother-in-law's to stitch. Well, for some reason, the house is very dark. So I found I cannot work on anything that's counted. So your kits would be perfect for that, especially if I had a little tin and that's the stitching kit that I'm taking to my mother-in-law's.
Yep.
And just that time to work on it.
Yeah. And then you find like with these, you know, because somebody did message me and say, I thought everything was going to fit in the tin, but the hoop won't fit.
Oh, geez.
Right. The hoop doesn't fit. It's the kind of thing.
Put it on your head and pretend it's a halo. Go for that.
But I find if you have a little drawstring bag, and I mean, I do have some drawstring bags in my shop, but you can also just a drawstring bag, I think, is perfect to put a hoop with the project on it and your tin and to travel with it.
Right. Perfect.
No, when I saw that, Beth, I thought of you because you and your husband do a lot of driving road trips and you're always doing a post. You're stitching in the car and all self-contained.
Right. You need to have your scissors in there that you're going to have because nothing's worse than getting on the road trip and you're like, oh,
yeah,
I don't have scissors or, oh, no needles. There's that's the pits. That's just terrible. So
yeah, not too much stitching gets done without a needle.
No. Yeah, scissors I can almost do without, but you know.
Yeah, you can chew the thread off.
That jackknife.
No. You dental floss. The little cutter on that works. If you're desperate. It doesn't make a very clean edge, but it works if you're desperate.
Sounds like you know from experience.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah, you need a magnet in the glove box with needles attached to it, Beth. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Then when you forget, you're good to go. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Debbie, you mentioned about the stick and stitch motifs, which are on the soluble stuff, but also your bundles. When I saw bundles, I thought, what's that? And then I learned that you take two or three of your designs and make a bundle out of them with some kind of a theme. I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. People can save money, right? If I'm selling more, I'll give you a discount, but also it could be nice to display them together So I just put up a bundle, a red, white and blue bundle because I just came out with a patriotic design. But I have some
good timing.
I'm learning, right? Because that's the other thing when you asked what I design. I do get a lot of requests for things, and I've had a lot of requests for a patriotic design. So I bundled it with the lighthouse has a lot of blues and reds in it, and I have an Amsterdam canal scene with old European houses that has a lot of blues and reds. Because when I display things, again, I like to use little easels or plate stands to display them in a vignette, like on my sideboard. So it can be, and I love to display by color or style my house by color.
Yeah. Now you have a couple of people, you mentioned them, who help you out. I was most intrigued with your son and his role in the business.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, Isaac started with me when I first started it. And because, you know, doing something new, I couldn't imagine how to ship product. I had sold digital product for so many years. I had no idea, right, how it would work to weigh things and put them in an envelope. It sounds pretty silly now. So Isaac was on the whole. He set up the Shopify store initially, and he got our, you know, he just figured out the whole shipping. And for the first year or so, he did work. He lived closer to me. He's still in college. He's a physics major. And he came over and regularly did the shipping. But I lost him about, I don't know, 6 months ago. So I'm doing all my own shipping now. But and then I have an assistant also who does a lot of the digital work for me, all the Pinterest work and a lot of the social media work. But yeah, it was fun to work with Isaac, and yeah.
They grow up. It happens.
They do. He also helped me set up a lot of my email automation, you know, because again, it's a business and it's an online business. So he helped me set up a lot of the, you know, get a new person in, give them a coupon, try to turn them into a customer, all those email flow kind of things.
Yeah. So, now he's the one that knits.
He knits. He's gotten really into knitting in the last, I don't know, maybe 4 months. It's amazing to me that, you know, and he liked embroidering at first. And so
we lost
kind of lost. Yeah. So he does. He can embroider. He likes to do crafty things. He likes to keep his hands busy. And I remember he taught himself to crochet many years ago. And I remember my brother would always be like, get out here and help me build a chicken coop, Nancy. What are you doing? And Isaac didn't really care. He's just happy to be crocheting. And so I don't know why, but he started crocheting and he realized it wasn't challenging enough. So he taught himself to knit. So he took us all off to the New Hampshire Wool and Yarn Festival last weekend. And for my birthday, he made me these fingerless gloves with a Icelandic pattern on it. I mean, he's been knitting for 4 months.
Wow.
Neat.
Yeah. But yeah, it's right. Everybody likes to, lots of people like to craft.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it's keeping your hands busy. I think after a while, the computer screen, looking at images, I like to have something in my hands. And I think, I wonder how many young people are finding that they need that too, that, you know, at least I have something when I'm done, you know, when I'm.
Yeah. 'Cause he's 22 years old. It's still amazing to me how into it he is. And, you know, his girlfriend's like, my family thinks he's a savant. <You know>? I think it's really stress relieving. And I get a lot of messages from customers who tell me a lot of them do find that it's stress relieving to do this. And also I hear from people who say, oh, I can't do that because I have pain in my hands or my eyes aren't good. And then other people message me and say, my doctor told me I should do this to relieve the pain, to try and get my hands more flexible, to try and improve my eyesight.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, the different points of view.
Well, isn't that, if you have arthritis, isn't that one of the things that, you know, keep those joints moving? I mean,
that's what some people have told me. Yeah. And then other people have told me that they can't do it, but yeah. I think it's always important to just be doing things. And, you know, the great thing is, I mean, you guys must find if your hands are busy, then you're not checking your phone to see, to read the news or to see if somebody sent you a message or what's on sale.
Right. Or even for me, I'm not eating nervously or whatever. It's you know, it's, we used to call it, you know, it's kind of a diet plan. You know, you can't stitch and eat at the same time. I know people say they use chopsticks to get to their Cheetos. I'm like, okay,
oh my gosh. I wish you hadn't told me that back.
I'm so sorry.
Uh-oh.
You should not have told me that.
Sorry. Yeah, I try to avoid going into the kitchen. I just, you know, if I need to stand up after a while, after stitching for about an hour, I'm like, okay, don't go into the kitchen except to get a glass of water and then go sit back down.
It's really satisfying to see a project come together too, you know, just to have made.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm picturing Debbie tonight sitting down with a bowl of Cheetos.
Because I actually do like Cheetos too.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, What does it look like in the next couple of years? Are you just gonna, you're riding this and trying to get your business fully established, or do you see new things coming up, you know, growth and new designs, or are you just kind of letting it happen as it happens?
It's a good question. I think I'm kind of letting it happen as it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to sustain a certain level, and I do think right now I need new designs in order to sustain that and in order to grow. Of course, a lot of my business is repeat business. And so Because it's kind of it's a consumable, right? Craft right. supply, a kit, a pattern. And so I do need those just to keep my current customers coming back and also just to grow my audience. I think they'll reach a point where I don't need to create as many new designs as I am creating. Like I've been doing a couple a month lately. I don't know exactly where it'll go. I mean, I could see that I try to do some square format or I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, well,
lucky me that I don't have to know. I mean, right, this is kind of my retirement business in a way. I mean, I'm very actively working on it, but I'm 61. I can let it flow at this point.
Well, I mean, that's great because, but you do have to keep feeding the meter. If you're going to got to keep coming up with designs, do you feel a pressure to do that? Or do you have enough designs in your head that, it'll take you a year to get them all out?
It'll take me a while to get them all out. You know, I got kind of tired, and this month in May is the first month that I've only had one design, and we're already halfway through, and I just finally got it out. And I won't have any in August either. So I did get a little tired, but then after I rest for a month, I'm pretty energized. Because the other thing is, just like, this is my crafting, and if I don't have a new design in the works, what am I crafting?
Yep.
So, right.
Got to feed that need too. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Well, Debbie, this has been a treat. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored. I mean, I listen to the other episodes, and the people that you have on are such talented, longtime, true artists. And I feel like I'm very new in the arena, and I really appreciate you guys bringing me in.
Hey, art is art, you know?
Right.
So. Yeah.
And I think you have something fresh to offer to people that I think people are going to enjoy this, seeing your designs.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, Debbie. And thanks to everyone for listening.